You're listening to the Samuel Andreev Podcast. In this episode, rather than interviewing a guest, I'm going to offer a look at my own creative process. Specifically, I'm going to talk about the second volume in my ongoing series of piano pieces, numbers 5 to 8, which was published recently by Edition Impronta, and which has been recorded by the Stuttgart-based pianist Jana Lutz. I don't often comment on my own work, mainly because I have secrets that I don't wish to divulge, and anyway, other people are better at it than me. So my focus will not be on questions of musical technique. Rather, I will speak about the process of writing these pieces, some of the decisions that went into making them, and the aesthetic considerations behind the pieces as a whole. I've wanted to write keyboard music since my very earliest attempts at composition, and while I wrote often for the instrument in my chamber music, I wrote no solo piano music at all, aside from two Schoenberg-inspired pieces when I was about 20, until piano piece number 1, which dates from 2011. Before that, the piano seemed not to be an ideal vehicle for what I was after. Gradually, though, I started to see what I could do. It had nothing to do with the bulk of what is normally referred to as the romantic repertoire. Rather, I've attempted to develop a way of writing for keyboard that is spare, mainly contrapuntal, and highly articulated. Some of my piano pieces are almost like diagrams in the sense that there is just enough material to delineate a form. Not surprisingly, the first piece that approached that ideal was my piano piece number 1 from 2011, 10 years ago already. At present, I'm working on numbers 9 and 10, and I expect this series of piano pieces to extend indefinitely into the future, with no set limit, and no expectation as to how the nature of these pieces may evolve over time. Given that I started the series in 2011 and am presently working on number 9, that of course means I'm composing about one piano piece a year on average. However, that's partly because I'm trying to do something new in each work, which takes time, and also these pieces are not the result of commissions. They're just a purely personal undertaking, composed when an idea crystallizes and when there's enough time between projects to focus on them properly. You might ask why a composer in the 21st century would want to write for piano in the first place. It's not as though pianists are in need of any new repertoire. They have piles of it, and it would be difficult to argue that more is needed. The piano repertoire is rivaled perhaps only by that of the violin in terms of the number of masterpieces by major figures that have been written for it. It seems as though every conceivable facet of the instrument has been thoroughly explored, every expressive world conquered. One could argue that the sonic resources of the modern concert grand piano have been exploited in every conceivable manner. To put it simply, what is there left to say? Happily, I view things rather differently. I suppose I would have to, or else suffer from creative paralysis. One has to believe, even if only for the amount of time spent writing a new piece, that it is somehow worthwhile to do so. The essence of a composition is not its sonic materiality, but rather its internal flow, its movement, and the thoughts and feelings it may stimulate in the person listening to it. Of course, if the piece is made of clichés and badly digested fragments of other people's music, nothing much will be stimulated. Yet, I believe that it is possible through patience, constant hard work, and a restless, questing spirit to discover new continents, new planets, new galaxies of expression and thought, no matter what the medium might be. Metaphysical considerations aside, it is necessary to rethink the piano in order to create new work that is personally convincing and valid. Without this, it would be difficult to write anything. Just how does one apprehend this extraordinarily versatile instrument, seemingly capable of just about anything? In my case, the piano is essentially a melodic and contrapuntal instrument, one capable of incredible subtleties of voicing, dynamics, and articulation. I want my pieces to be so transparent that listening to them is like peering through multiple glass panels separated from each other by great distances, or surveying an endless, intricate mosaic with elusive yet perceptible patterns and tessellations stretching out as far as the eye can see. Let's look at the individual pieces that make up this collection. As we go along, I'll insert Jana Lucht's recordings of each piece in turn. Piano pieces 5 and 6 have a strange work history, and they were not written in order. 6 came first, but was initially rejected and replaced with 5. Ultimately, I decided to keep both of them. They both have the same sort of texture, namely an elastic two-part counterpoint in which the voices continually cross. But let's talk about number 5 to start. In this piece, I tried to create the maximum possible differentiation between two interrelated lines. The upper voice is slow, conjunctive, and lyrical, limited to only a few notes at a time. Its range is deliberately limited as well, and it is mostly confined to about an octave. By way of contrast, the lower voice is irregular, staccato, generally louder, and disjunctive. The voices are also distinct in terms of timbre, resonance, and pedaling. The lower voice is often played with the una corda pedal down, resulting in a slightly more muted sound. And sometimes I use the sustain pedal, resulting in a pooling of resonance, which can then be released, so that only one note is left hanging on. As the piece progresses, this disjunction becomes more marked, with the intervals in the lower voice becoming larger, and leaping above and below the upper voice. If I had to describe the piece in a few words, I'd say it's about two very different characters emerging out of the same conditions, diverging and differentiating, and joining again, always in different ways. Next in the series is number 6. In common with 5, it has a lean, two-part texture throughout. However, there are some significant differences. To begin with, the voices are more equal here, and are not as sharply differentiated. Secondly, the writing is more linear, and the phrases are generally longer. So maybe it's worth taking a minute to describe how these two pieces are interrelated. As mentioned earlier, piece number 6 was written before number 5. I produced a large number of drafts and sketches for this piece, but gradually realized I was caught in a labyrinth, unable to tell up from down, left from right. The genesis of this piece was a sketch page I made in October 2019 in Monte Carlo. It was an experiment to see what would happen if I wrote some piano music entirely spontaneously, without any premeditation or sketching. I rejected the result, but the melodic nature of this sketch and its clear, transparent texture found its way into piece number 6. Again, while beginning this piece, I worked consciously without any sketch material, without having the faintest idea of where the piece would end up taking me. Mostly, I wrote one voice at a time, adding the second voice afterwards, and focusing on a few bars at a time. For the first 40 bars or so, everything seemed to be going well, until I could no longer sense how the piece could be continued. Rather than grinding on with it, I abandoned the work, leaving a large section of it incomplete. Having set it aside for a year, I returned to it in 2020, and found most of it to be much better than I had remembered. The key to its completion suddenly appeared with total clarity, so I made a few changes, wrote the ending, and was satisfied with the result. Piece number 7 was composed last, but worked better in the third position in this collection. It came out of a desire to create a fuller, more complex texture, as well as a longer piece that would lend additional weight to the collection. This work has a very simple, formal outline. Three main sections, all written in three voices, are separated by three short solo passages in which only one voice is heard, all in contrasting registers. The solos serve the same function as mortar in masonry. They hold the bricks together. In the contrapuntal sections, each voice has its own scale, or interval pattern. In other words, each voice does something different, but I was very careful to make sure that the resulting harmonic combinations would be coherent, and would have a strong sense of line and of continuity. From the rhythmic point of view, the voices are complementary throughout, which is to say they use different values. The top voice is written in quintuplets throughout, while the lower voice uses 32nd notes, and the bass 16th notes. While the upper voices are completely chromatic, the bass lines use modified diatonic scales, which however are presented in the bottom octave of the keyboard, using many large and disjunctive intervals so that we are not always sure of what we're hearing. The upper two voices, by way of contrast, are forced to occupy the same narrow space, and at times, all three voices converge toward a single point, forming a knot, as it were, a point of maximal harmonic tension and dissonance, which can then untangle itself, the voices spreading out again. The solo passages have something skeletal about them. The three voices, with their distinct registers, attempt to assert themselves, free of the complex polyphonic web in which they are normally enmeshed. These episodes do not last for long, but they are intense, ruthlessly exposed and articulated so that every note, every rhythm, can be heard with total clarity. Thank you. The final piece in this series is number 8. This I consider to be one of the more unusual pieces I have composed. Uncharacteristically for me, most of the piece is based on a simple ostinato pattern, played in regular 16th notes in the right hand, with chords in the left hand. The piece almost never diverges from this simple texture, which I nevertheless tried to present in a diverse array of guises, so that it would always sound new and yet always familiar. It was very difficult to write, partly because the harmonic sensations I was after were so elusive. The piece uses chromatically sliding chords and melodic patterns to create a sensation of continuous instability that clashes with the familiarity of the rhythmic patterns that underlie the whole work. The basic figures and the rhythmic character of the piece are connected to Baroque music, and particularly the cinquième double from Jean-Philippe Rameau's Gavotte in G major. In my piece, however, the dance-like character is continually subverted by an unpredictable meter and surprising abrupt changes in speed. While numbers 5 and 6 are clearly interrelated, the pieces in this set are otherwise intentionally all very different from each other. Rather than repeat myself, I've sought to create new forms, textures, and expressive modes in each new piece. I'm inspired in this sense by the contemplation of the billions of galaxies that make up the universe. How many planets are there, unreachable and unknowable, with properties we can hardly dream of? How many forms of life may be out there? With this in mind, there is no excuse for the creator of music to remain idle, to be satisfied with clichés and outworn forms. We've barely begun to explore anything, and everything remains to be discovered. Perhaps the only limitation is that of the ability of a work to convey meaning within the framework of a particular society and culture. But even that limit is surprisingly elastic. And so, we continue to compose and to listen.